Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Desert Dogcast, Five for Howling's official Arizona Coyotes podcast. This is our third episode, talking about the first couple of weeks of the NHL season, more specifically, once again, for the Arizona Coyotes. Alongside Rose Ford and Carl Pavlik, I am Rob Leonio, here to get you guys going on all your latest Coyotes news. Let's start with what we saw first in these first five games. It was, guys, what do you think? You know, it was kind of an interesting, slope to say. What do you guys think about these first five games?
Well, we're 2-2-1, and that's the best start we've had in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling positive about it.
It's definitely been a little bit of a roller coaster. Started out kind of slow, starting to pick up speed now.
And the teams that we have beat, you know, are pretty serious teams. You know, Vegas and Winnipeg. Well, Winnipeg is having their issues right now, but
a lot of issues.
They still have a potent offense, so.
Yeah.
But the first game against Anaheim, Anaheim ended up being better than I thought they were going to be.
Right.
I mean, I always knew John Gibson was good, but wasn't expecting them to be able to score either.
Maybe it's the Dallas Eakins effect.
Yeah, the Dallas Eakins effect plus the young kids they brought up from the San Diego Gulls.
I mean, it's kind of a package deal. You bring up Dallas Eakins, you got to bring up his team with them.
I mean, if you look at it, they've only scored two more goals than we have, and they've allowed one more, and yet they are 4-2, and we are 2-2-1. So it's definitely not far off between the two. I think that Gibson is going to drag that team kicking and screaming away from a lottery pick.
Well, that depends on whether or not they're going to actually, you know, play him to death.
They may have to. They may just start double shifting him between their AHL team and the NHL team and be like, get tired, Gibson. We need to get this lottery pick.
Yeah, and the losses were disappointing against Boston, and the OT loss against Colorado was really disappointing because of the comeback that they were starting.
I mean, if there's one thing that I think the first five games shows is that the Coyotes still do not have consistent offense. They were limited to just one goal in their first two. They explode against Vegas. Most of that Colorado game, I think definitely the first two periods, but it went pretty deep. Like, they didn't score until, I want to say 15 minutes in, or yeah, the exact number, but no, that's not exactly a recipe for a lot of success. I wouldn't like to see that replicated. I'd like to see them find more consistent offense throughout the night, but, I mean, it's hard to complain. And yeah, first goal scored against Colorado was 9 minutes and 27 seconds into the third period.
So the Colorado game was exciting once the third period got going, which is nice because I was only to make it home in time for the third period. No, wait, that was Winnipeg. Sorry. Getting my games all confused. It was nice to see in all the games where we scored goals, it was nice to see distributed scoring. So first we saw Stephon in the Anaheim game, and then we saw in the Vegas game, Garland got two, Schmaltz got one, and Yarmolson got one. Yay, Yarmolson, he got a goal.
Then, finally.
Yeah.
I know. It was like something like 90-something games between goals for him. Poor guy. And then we had the Colorado game where Grabner and Schmaltz both scored. And then in the Winnipeg, where we won 4-2, Garland got one, Dvorak got two, and Schmaltz got another one. So that's three goals in three games for Schmaltz. So I think he's doing well coming back from injury.
Definitely got to love Schmaltz's performance. He's doing pretty well for himself.
Now.
Yeah.
He started off a little slow and a little shaky, but he's definitely improved.
And you know that tends to happen on a player that's recovering. They start off a little slow and shaky, and then when they get there, they're good.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when half the team hasn't has played less than 40-something games the previous season. It's going to take a while to get the group back.
And Schmaltz, like, I remember last season, I almost attributed his success to playing with Clayton Keller, and he's been playing extremely well away from Keller as well, which is great. It really makes me think that the team made the right choice in signing him to that deal.
Yeah, and the last game against Winnipeg, it was the Garland, Dvorak, and Schmaltz line were all together, and they were the only ones that scored.
Luckily, they scored all of the goals.
All of the goals. So that was a pretty decent... I mean, one of them was a power play goal, so they weren't... I don't think they were all together for that. But...
Sure.
That's another thing. The power play is starting to click now, too.
Yeah. It only took 5 games for the Coyotes to score their first power play goal, and they got 2 of them against Winnipeg, which is great because they could have used one against Anaheim or Boston or Colorado.
But, you know, those are some of the kinks that you try to work out over the, you know, those first several games. And that's what helps about an 82-game season. The first, you know, I guess maybe 10 games are kind of, you know, work out the kinks. The next, that's like you work out in groups of 10. And then, like, I get the thing, you see how things go from there.
Yeah, that's actually something that Tockett always says, is that he looks at the games in groups of 10. Groups of 10 is the big thing. So, and I actually recently saw something from Michael Blake McCurdy from HockeyViz.com, where apparently there are some things that do stabilize over 10 games. So looking at 10-game chunks makes a lot of sense.
That's interesting. I mean, hopefully things are starting to stabilize, because after the starts from the previous 2 seasons, the fact that 2-2-1 is our best start in a long time, that may be a little bit concerning.
It is, but you know, there's a lot of things you look for from some of the players that look promising. Again, you're hoping most of these guys stay healthy. Of course, you know, they did already lose one guy for quite a long time.
Oh, yes. But Blatchock is bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Dremelson doing what he does best and unfortunately getting hurt in the process.
Yes. Poor Dremelson. In the Colorado game, he blocked a shot from Eric Johnson. This is according to Craig Morgan. I didn't go back and look to see who it was. And it broke his fibula.
That's brutal.
And that's the thin bone on the outside of the bottom part of your leg.
Yep.
Which apparently also stabilizes your ankle. So, yeah.
I actually, as a kid, I think I broke either the fibula or the other one. The tibula?
Tibia.
Yeah, tibia. I cannot remember which one I broke as a kid or cracked, and it definitely did not feel well walking afterwards, but I'm sure Dremelson will have a professional rehabbing him as opposed to me, who just immediately jumped off the hospital bed and rolled my ankle.
That was not a good idea.
I mean, that's why he's out for 3 months, so.
Yeah.
It's going to be, well, I'm not sure exactly what it says 3 months, but like, you know, how much of that is the initial rehabilitation and how much of that is, you know, getting back to game time speed or getting those reps back in on the ice.
Yeah, I broke the second, third, and fourth metatarsals of my foot, which is the part of your foot that connects the toe to the rest of the foot, when I was younger, and that took a month just to heal.
Surprisingly, I've never broken a bone.
Yeah, well, I was sledding downhill and didn't see the tree and didn't turn and smacked right into it.
I was riding a bike and didn't see the truck. Granted, I was crossing on a green the wrong way, so it was really my fault, but yeah.
Yeah, shockingly, the tree didn't move.
Can you imagine?
They never do.
I know. countries.
They have, you know, no courtesy whatsoever.
But I will say, with Jamelson being out, it's very unfortunate, but it does give some of the younger guys a chance to step up and hopefully see what we can do.
It gave the call up to Kyle Capobianco from Tucson. And the game seemed better than I thought it would. You know, obviously,
I was
an injury, but I like Capobianco.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what he can do. I was just kind of surprised that he got the call, or he played a game before Labushkin. I thought Labushkin would get the first one.
Yeah. Well, I guess they're just trying to see how it all, like, you know, how things work out, maybe how these line pairings go. You know, again, these are all, like, working out kinks, seeing where things fit. If Capobianco doesn't fit on there, they'll put Labushkin, and they'll send Capobianco down. You know, that's kind of the benefit of having guys that are waiver eligible, or not waiver eligible yet, so they'll just go put them up and down as they please, at least until trade deadline when that becomes limited. But
I've definitely seen a couple articles suggesting that the Coyotes may be looking for a defenseman to replace Yarmolson, and I just don't see that unless both Labushkin and Capobianco really stumble.
No, they're wrong. They're just plain wrong. Because, I mean, even Pierre LeBrun just came right out and said that they're going to look internally first. We're too close to the cap for that. And Yarmolson is going to be coming back. So there's just no way.
I'm sure there was also a lot of very optimistic fans being like, who can we get rid of? Our worst defenseman with a massive contract. Let's send him to Arizona. That'll be a good fit, right? And everyone else being like, no.
No.
No. No one wants Jack Johnson.
Or Cody Ceci.
That Cody Ceci trade and everything going beyond that, that's still quite a joke going around in hockey Twitter.
Oh, yeah. We don't want your bad defensemen. We don't want Brent Seabrook. We don't want Cody Ceci. We don't want Jack Johnson. We don't want your salary dumps anymore. We're not that team.
Yeah, no, that's...
No, hang on. Seabrook is a former Blackhawk, and if the Coyotes like one thing...
Don't you even Blackhawk. Put that out there.
How many trades have they had with Chicago in the last couple years?
Let's not count.
I mean, it feels like they've all worked out for both teams, though. Schmaltz, Yarmolson...
I don't think the Yarmolson one has worked out. Teams.
Sure. That one's worked out for us.
Yeah. I don't think they've all gone in the Blackhawks evening out favor.
What was the Schmaltz trade again? What was the...
Strom.
For Strom. That's right.
Strom and Fellini.
Yeah.
That's right. Strom's doing pretty well for himself. At least, kind of.
Yeah, as long as he's with, you know,
He's getting his minutes and in Chicago.
Yeah. All last season, people were saying that we lost the Strome trade, and I'm really anxious to see Nick Schmaltz with a full season and see if that gets reevaluated.
Oh, I'm sure it will. You just have to, again, like, sample size was too small last season to really say, oh, this was a one trade. It takes a couple seasons. It really does. Because, you know, a player can develop into one thing, and again, the same goes the other way. We can go back the other way.
Yeah. And, I mean, Schmaltz is currently leading the team in points, tied for the leading goals. That's good for us. I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah. And, you know, the Hinostroza Osterley Hossa contract trade where we gave them Mackenzie Entwistle and what? Oh yeah, Marcus Kruger. I think that's better for us.
Yeah. Especially since they don't look like they're necessarily going to be needing that cap space for the next couple, or depends on if they want to do a full rebuild or not. I think that's going to depend a lot on how they finish this season, and it's not looking great for them to start out.
So what do you guys think of, I mean, I think we touched on it a little bit, but of how Connor Garland's been doing. I know, like, he's kind of been a lot of talk, like, as a whole, maybe in the last couple years.
He's been doing great, you know. He's been getting to the front of the net, which is interesting for a little guy, and scoring some goals. He's right now, he's our leading, one of our leading scorers. He's tied with Schmaltz.
Yeah, it's definitely something where, you know, I'm not saying that every single shift he has is the best, but there are definitely shifts where he is the hardest working player on the ice. I wish that was a consistent thing, and if it was, I could see him definitely getting a bigger role with the team. But for right now, he is playing, I think, to everyone's expectations, and it's great considering he was a fifth round pick.
Yeah,
Coyotes,
because he's a fifth round pick, he's actually playing above expectation.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I love about late round draft picks, because you know they come out of nowhere and they become, you know, something else. You know, some of my favorite players that I've seen in hockey have been, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round draft picks, and you know Connor Garland is going to be, you know, can be one of those people. And what's weird, though, is, again, before that we started recording, is we had a I kind of was talking to I'm not sure if Carl was in here, but I was talking with Rose about this, was that he has those, you know, there are those people, you know, Coyotes and Roadrunners fan base who don't like him because of how, you know, he has spurts of moments where he doesn't look great, just based off the skating on the ice. But can that guy score? He finds his way to score, and he's pretty good at it.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's only 23, so I can definitely see him only getting better as the years go on. I think the moments where he is at his best can take up a lot of your mind, because when he is at his best, he is on another level. I would just personally like to see him at that level more.
Yeah, I think he's what Tocchet calls a sticky player. He's just so tenacious. He never wants to give up the puck. And, you know, like a little pit bull.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be his new rap name, Lil Pitbull.
Lil Pitbull.
He's always after it, always after it.
And I can imagine a little pit bull named Connor Garland.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something where I'm curious to see what he does with the full season, because he only had 52 games last year.
I mean,
got 47 games.
He got called up initially in like December. He spent some time up there, like about a good 10 games. He got sent back down to Tucson for like 5 games and got called right back up, and then played the rest of the season with them.
Yeah, I think he got sent back down because they were on the All-Star break or something like that, or the bye week.
I believe that was it. Or maybe it was before that, because I think he got sent back down, and then it was like the whole Aiden Hill thing where like some people got sent back, got called back up because the AHL was in Christmas break.
Oh, right.
Okay.
So, because they have a longer Christmas break than...
than the NHL
does. And I think it was also the some other deadline. I forgot what it was. There's a deadline in mid-December.
Was it at the end when they were pushing for a spot?
Oh, it was the no, it wasn't the deadline. It was the roster freeze, the holiday roster freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why, because they wanted to make sure that there wasn't you know, there's a reason why they had the holiday roster fee. So it's not like, hey, we're going to send you up and down during the holidays. That means you have to move, you know, from this place to the next when you're supposed to be spending time with your family in X city.
Yeah. Which is actually one thing the league, I think, gets right.
Oh yeah. No, I love the roster.
Consider their players' lives.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a lot easier now where it's, hey, go down to Tucson versus, hey, go to Portland, Maine for a while.
Or
Springfield, Massachusetts.
Or even for something like like, let's say the Vancouver minor team. It's like, hey, we're going to send you back down to Utica. Like, yeah. You have to go all the 2,000, 3,000 miles across the country. That'd be brutal.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talked about this in the Lost episode, but the way that the AHL is expanding is definitely great for the NHL because it's giving those teams like a closer farm team to actually, you know, send their players to and not be afraid of being like, what if we need to do a recall and the guy's on the plane across the country and can't get it in time?
I mean, yeah. That also makes me a little disappointed of why Seattle's minor league team is in Palm Springs rather than, you know, say Portland or something like that. But, you know, you're splitting hairs here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that also makes the travel easier for the AHL team because they've got so many other teams around them.
There's like 6 teams in SoCal total or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
6 teams in California. There's the Rain, the Gulls, the Barracuda, the Condors, the Bakersfield Condors, and the Stockton Heat are all right there in California. And then there's Tucson, which is, you know, just a highway away.
Yep.
Plus, if you get a Portland team, it has to be the Portland Hipsters, and no league is going to approve that.
Yeah. I wonder how if maybe there was the major junior team from the WHL kind of didn't want that because they didn't want to have to compete for audience.
You mean the Portland Winterhawks?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like Portland's got a pretty big population base. I don't know how much of a competition it'd be.
Also, I guess to be fair, because Seattle, I know, has like 3 major junior teams or whatever. They have Seattle. They have
Seattle Florida. Thunderbirds, the Everett Silvertips, Everett Silvertips, and I can't remember the
Tri-City
other one,
Americans.
Unless you mean Portland.
Tri-City Americans further away. A little further away from the close. Seattle area, but close. Huh. Also, Spokane is also in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
I don't know. But it's then again, definitely one of those business calls that they didn't consult us on.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of decisions to be made within the American Hockey League and where things go. Against travel was one thing, and I think with it being in Palm Springs is one of the reasons might help increase Pacific Division games from 68 to the, you know, AHL standard 76. But maybe
that'd be nice. Wouldn't have to break out a calculator when I have to calculate the standings and what Tucson needs to do.
Oh,
believe
me, I was the one having to do that last year or the last 2 years. I'm just like, okay, so this team has to lose this amount of games, and then Tucson has to win this, but they have to win in regulation, and then I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah, that's too much for fans to do. Super fans, yes. Everyone else is gonna be like, I don't know.
So they're lucky they have, you know, a writer in Tucson like me who's willing to go through all that or just has the time to do it. Yeah. Speaking of which, the Tucson Roadrunners start this week.
Very nice.
Yay. At home, you mean.
Yeah, they start at home this week on Friday and Saturday. They have already played 3 games in the road against they played San Antonio, Ontario, and I'm blanking on the third team for some reason. Because they played 3 different teams. It was
Texas.
Texas, that's right.
Which one was the game Ronta played in?
The Texas game.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the first one. He shut them out.
Yeah, which got him his callback. So Ronta's with the team. Looked very impressive against Colorado.
Speaking of, you know, Ronta, the goaltending going on in the organization is really interesting, given that, like, I talk about this all the time, how deep it is. Like, have you guys been able to look at that? So, of course, you have Ronta and Kemper, and then in Tucson you have Aiden Hill and Why am I blanking on his name right now?
Ivan Prosvetov.
Yeah, Ivan Prosvetov. And then you have Merrick Madsen and Gannon.
Eric Shalgren.
Eric Shalgren. There we go. Eric Shalgren in where is it now?
The East Rapid City.
Rapid
Rush.
City. Rapid City. They have they change it every year. Like, I swear to God.
Well, you should be relieved because, yes, they did change back to the Rapid City Rush again for their ECHL affiliate, but they actually signed a 2-year agreement this time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember who follows San Jose. I remember the Allen Americans were their ECHL team for like a good 6 years or something like that. So like, I was used to somewhat of stability, and then I hear this going on. I'm like, Jesus, calm down.
It's actually not that uncommon.
Yeah,
I know, but I got a little stable spoiled. Ones.
And everyone else is just like a shuffle, like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic for some of these.
I mean,
it's like, I don't know.
To be fair, the ECHL has had its fair share of relocations in the last few years, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, right. I think some of the former ECHL teams became AHL teams in the Pacific Division, so then they refounded teams back in those same cities as ECHL teams, and it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, I know when the Roadrunners relocated from, Springfield fan posted on there that we stole their team and Jesus. How it was a shame that Springfield hockey is not going to exist for the first time in X amount of years. And then they immediately got another team, I think the ECHL team. And I was just like, do you still angry about stealing teams? Because, yeah.
Yeah, they got, I think it's Florida's ECHL team now.
Something like that.
The Springfield Falcons instead of Thunderbirds.
Yeah. But, I mean, going back to your point, the Coyotes goaltending has definitely one of its strongest suits, which is great. I think there were some people who were questioning whether or not we would make a trade early on, either getting rid of Ranta and going solely with like Kemper and Hill, and most people were like, no.
Why?
Yeah. I see the logic.
Yeah, with the injury history of this team, no.
Don't take that.
Having more is better.
I mean, they've already, let go Merrick Madsen. He's still on the team. Hunter Miska. They already let go Hunter Miska. And that one, I kind of came as no surprise because he was kind of, I felt like he was the one that was eventually going to get pushed out by, the other incoming goaltenders coming from my juniors and overseas, but
and the NCAA
also the NCAA. Yeah, Merrick Madsen coming to the NCAA,
and it's not like you get a great return for goaltenders either, so I didn't really see it. You can for
how desperate a team is.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe if we are doing really great towards the trade deadline and a team is desperate and dangling a superstar or just a really high offensive player, maybe I could see something, but why even mess with it at that point?
You know who could really use a goaltender right now is New Jersey.
Oh, poor New Jersey.
Poor New Jersey. Who we get to play soon, which is very great. As rough as the Coyotes' schedule has been to start out, it gets much easier in the next week.
You know, I just had to look up who the goaltenders were because I totally forgot.
Is it
Mackenzie Blackwood and Corey Schneider?
Mm-hmm.
That's, oh yeah. My God. Corey Schneider is still playing in the NHL? My God.
Yeah, I feel kind of bad for Schneider. He was caught up in that whole Luongo controversy in Vancouver, which just seemed toxic for everyone involved. And then he finally got free to New Jersey, and then New Jersey did the New Jersey thing.
Yeah, but I'm still going to say it. Between injuries and the upcoming expansion draft, just hang on to the goalies. Just hang on to them.
And also, if you have two really good goaltenders that you could do a tandem with, why not do that? It seems like the league is moving that way anyways. Why not have the best tandem in the NHL?
Yeah, Darcy Kuemper currently sporting a save percentage of 9.955, and Antti Raanta has a 9.06.
Ah, pretty good.
Yeah, pretty that's good. Only one game for Raanta, so I imagine that'll probably improve. But it's still not bad. And interestingly, right now, the worst goalie in the league is one we're familiar with. It's Jonathan Quick.
And that's a surprise because, Quick for several years, you know, in the early 2010s was one of the best goaltenders in the league. And
yeah. I think there was always kind of a question, though, if he was one of the best or if the LA system was one of the best.
Well,
I mean,
now the answer is neither.
I mean, you know who Jonathan Quick's backup was for a while, or at least for a couple years.
Darcy Kuemper.
There you go.
I wonder if they regret that trade.
How many backups has he had? He had a lot that kind of ended up becoming starters or, you know, 1Bs to a lot of teams. The Sharks have one of them in Martin Jones.
I cannot believe we got Darcy Kuemper for Tobias Reeder, if I recall. Was that 1-1? Which,
look how that turned out.
Yeah.
Who they didn't resign, by the way.
And then went on to have just the absolute worst year in Edmonton.
Oh, there was a.
And get called out by their owner.
There was
because he didn't score.
There was more to that trade than Tobias Reeder.
It was?
Yeah.
Was it a pick?
It was a goaltender.
Oh, was
Scott Wedgwood.
I forgot.
Yeah.
Scott Wedgwood. Who they also didn't keep.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's now one of the many goalies in the Tampa system.
Good for him getting into the Tampa system. Like, that's... Yeah. If you are going to be affiliated with a team, there's much worse teams to be affiliated with than the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Man, it's just amazing how quickly things change around here.
Yeah. Although it was remarked a lot that this is probably one of the more stable Coyotes teams in the past, because there's not too many additions other than, of course, Phil Kessel and Carl Soderberg.
Right, that's true. Most of the additions have just been people coming back from injury.
Yeah. Which, do you guys want to talk about how they've been playing? I think they've both been really good. Still waiting for Kessel to get his first goal, but every single game I watch Carl Soderberg do something where I'm like, that is great. I am so glad that we got him.
Yeah, and considering that we were giving up a seventh defenseman for him in Kevin Connaughton,
who was
pretty darn good.
Yeah. A seventh defenseman who was immediately sent down and then recalled, and I'm not sure if he's played a game yet.
He has. In fact, he played the Arizona game.
He did?
He did.
I did not notice. That may not be a good thing. or maybe a problem on my part. And it looks like as of 8 hours ago, he was sent back down.
Sorry, Kev.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Tries hard.
Yeah, he did. I never had too many issues with Kevin Connaughton's game when he was with the team. I never thought he was the best defenseman on the team, but hopefully he can find his game again.
You know, or they can find somebody who needs a left-handed defenseman.
That too, yeah.
You know who needs a left-handed defenseman from what I hear?
What's that?
Montreal.
Really?
They've been scouting left-handed defensemen lately.
Hmm.
Well, we don't have any to spare right now.
I was gonna say Montreal not looking good, but they 2-2-2, so they're one overtime loss more than we are. So, but
still early.
Still very early.
Yeah, I think I usually make my first like true analysis of these teams about a quarter of the way through the season, and then So I do groups of 10 to analyze like some teams, and then do like a whole standings analysis each quarter.
I
seems reasonable, so that you're not getting too high or too low on any one team.
Exactly.
I go into the season with the expectations for every team, almost every team. Sometimes they'll slip through, and then about the third way, I'm like, huh, was I wrong about that team? Did they just have a hot start? Are they in a slow patch? And see. And then normally I'm proven wrong by the time the playoffs come.
By the way, I'm bringing up some advanced stats for the some of the Coyotes players, courtesy of MoneyPuck. And what's interesting is the stuff regarding Phil Kessel's looking pretty good for him in terms of his on-ice expected goals percentage.
Which is good because he hasn't scored a goal yet. But I mean, he had a really great assist in that Stefan goal.
Yeah, that first game. And even so, that top line has been playing really well together. They just haven't been able to buy a goal.
Which, has you could say that for a lot of the games for the team.
And you're going to get that too. Like, it's all about really finding like whether or not that line is really the one that's going to, you know, score all the goals. Obviously, you know, you expect the top line to do that. Sometimes it's the second line. But it's all about tinkering to find out exactly how you want it to really work and how you get a team to fire on, I guess, all its cylinders.
And while the top line has been a little bit slower in the offense, the second line, the Schmaltz and Dvorak line has been really good. Definitely picking up the slack for any lack of goals on that one.
Yeah, and we saw it really well in the Winnipeg game when it was Dvorak, Schmaltz, and Garland together. So I'm expecting that we'll see that in games to come as well, that same line. Which allows them to keep the Grabner, Richardson, Hinostroza line together, because that's always a fun line too.
Oh yeah. That is going to be great, just seeing more of the speed of that line and just leaving opponents in the dust.
So we just got to get that first line going. And then the third line, which last night was Kraus, Soderberg. Soderberg and Fisher.
Right.
I would really like to see Kraus and Fisher get going too. But I wonder if they're going to rotate out rookie Barrett Hayton with that line too, because
he's been doing well for himself.
Yeah, he had his debut in the Vegas game, so our first win, where he got to wear the Coyote hat.
I said it on Twitter, I kind of missed the belt. I thought the belt was really cool.
That hat's kind of ugly.
I get it, it's more Coyote-y, but I like belt.
The belt was cool too. But I guess, I don't know who started the whole belt tradition, I don't remember. Maybe it was Eagle.
I think it was Yandel.
Okay. I don't know if any of the guys are actually into wrestling enough to warrant the belt being the best player trophy.
Very true. And other teams have gotten their own belt, so it's not as special as it was. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to have something, then, you know, why not have it be a Coyote head? Now that there's the, I forget which credit card it is, but like the woman in the bear suit. It's kind of like that.
That'd be fun.
I don't know. I don't normally watch like regular TV, So, like, commercials are very strange for me now that hockey season has started. It's also really great if you're watching games and on Twitter to realize that you're not watching something live. It's got like the delay, and you never think about there being a delay there.
Yep, it was nice to see Devo get 2 goals, and he got to wear the Coyote hat as well.
And he's been great in the faceoff circle this season. I was trying to pull up his numbers, but
Oh, here, I think I've got him. Face-off percentage.
looked like
Courtesy of Natural Stat Trick, he has taken 43 face-offs and has won 72% of them.
yeah. That is great, especially since the question from last season was who is going to win faceoffs this year? Because you have Richardson, you have Stefan, but kind of drops off after that. And it's great that he's stepped up and he's playing that role.
Yeah, and that just goes to show you how badly he was missed last season, because in his rookie year, he broke Martin Hanzel's record for the rookie with the most faceoff wins.
Go him. And considering he had a looks like a 46.8% face-off win percentage, that's probably not a great thing.
Yeah, and it was just funny that he actually broke that record while facing off against Martin Hanzel when he was on the Wild.
That's beautiful. I mean, if you go back enough in the Coyotes draft history, there is absolutely no way we'd be talking about a player that was even drafted in the second round, like a Christian Dvorak, and having this level of impact. I remember we couldn't get our first round picks right for the longest time. It is so good that just up and down the draft, it's finally clicking in a way. Great that our scouting department exists now. It's not just one guy in Europe. Well, all of our listeners should stay tuned to this season as I try some of the weird food in Gila River Arena that was
Should we make
announced.
that a segment on the podcast, or should we just, have like a written piece for that?
That'll be a segment on the podcast.
There we
I'm
go.
not sure I could justify having that be a 5 for howling piece.
That's what I love about this podcast. You can really talk about really anything. That's what I love about podcasts.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're a Coyotes fan, I'm sure you saw the food announcements, and how they were very interesting food announcements. Let's put it at that. And yeah, most people are probably not going to be trying the stuff. I will try some of the stuff.
By the way, something we were talking about on the hidden episode or whatever you called it the first time around, Carl,
The lost
the last
episode.
episode. I actually had some Pink Whitney. I actually finally found it.
Oh yeah, how'd you like it?
It's not bad. It's not great because it's New Amsterdam, and New Amsterdam isn't great vodka. But you know what? It's not. I can understand that it's, $11 bottle.
It's a very diplomatic way to put it. Now they need to make a gin drink, because I will do a gin and tonic every night of the week.
Well, should we go over the new food options?
Should we?
Yeah, why not? Since it's on the
Okay.
lost episode that nobody heard.
Actually, I think that was the post-podcast wrap-up of the last episode, but let's go through some of them and we'll get some of your guys' thoughts because, yeah. Do you have them pulled up already or?
I do.
Okay.
So we've got the giant pretzel, which is a Bavarian style giant pretzel served with beer cheese fondue. And that's at the Brathaus in 109.
If
And it
you're looking
comes.
around, it's. Oh, no, you were going to talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah. They're limited. So you have to get there early to get yours. But they are massive. When they say giant, they aren't kidding because they come in a box the size of a large pizza box. And it takes up the whole box.
And I will say, when you're at Gila River Arena, Wetzel's Pretzels is definitely the biggest line there. So
really?
I'm curious to see how this is going to go with that. Yeah, I'd say it's Wetzel's Pretzels, possibly Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, Wetzel's Pretzels, like, there's three different Wetzel's stands, and all of them, when they're open, have a line.
Yeah.
Have a massive line. Next up is the aforementioned barbecue sundae. Pork on a fork, smoked brisket served over a bed of mashed potatoes and topped with barbecue sauce and crispy onions.
I can have that.
See,
I love mashed potatoes.
I like me some mashed potatoes. I like me some brisket. I don't know why that's at a hockey game, if I'm being perfectly honest.
That sounds like it sounds like a baseball game, maybe, kind of thing. Like,
or like a restaurant, like a place where I go and like sit down and eat, as opposed to go back to a seat.
See, the thing is,
you're sitting down the whole game.
When it comes to these games, just weird things are becoming more of a thing because, well, like, why go to a restaurant when you can have something very strange inside the stadium while you're watching the game?
Yeah, but why pay stadium food pricing for something very strange?
Because you want to.
Yeah, exactly.
I got no problem with that. And apparently, at the arena is the only place you can get the barbecue sundae from Pork on a Fork.
Which, surprisingly, is in sections 122 and 214. So I really feel like they think that this is going to be a big thing if they're having it in multiple sections.
And then there's the Tockett's Tachos, named after Coach Rick Tockett. It's crispy tater tots loaded with cheese sauce, refried beans, pico de gallo, and sour cream. And that's at section 212.
That's a little much for me. I don't know if I could handle that.
Yeah, I know. Because, like, if it were just nachos, the chips wouldn't be as filling. But with tater tots, those are going to be filling.
Yeah, because we're talking potatoes. Like, right. It's starch. It's going to fill you up.
This is just going to call it now. Not going to be one of the things I try. I'm not really a big refried beans or pico de gallo fan. I'm not even a big tater tots fan, if I'm being perfectly honest. Which has gotten people yelling at me about Sonic.
Oh,
before.
See, no, I love tots. Like, if I had to choose between tots and fries, I'm gonna go tots most of the time, unless I know the fries are better at that certain place. But
Rob, you'll just have to do the review on that one.
Well, I can't because
if you ever get to a Coyotes game.
Well, not about that. It's more about my. My stomach. I don't think it would take it too lightly.
I mean, you don't have to eat at all.
It's not that. I'm a bit lactose, so it's not. It wouldn't. Yeah.
All right. You're one of those poor, unfortunate souls.
I know. It does suck, but hey, I'll take it.
Then next up is the chicken and donuts. Crispy chicken covered in onion marmalade and maple bacon on a glazed donut bun from Dunkin' Donuts. And that's located at section 103.
And that's going to be the first thing I try at the next game I actually make it to.
I mean, if chicken and waffles is popular, why not chicken and donuts?
Yeah, it's a thing.
Basically a Luther burger, only with chicken. And I hear Luther burgers are actually very terrible. So I'm curious to see what this is like. If you don't know what the Luther burger is, watch the Boondocks episode. It is,
you know,
it looks so good, and I cannot imagine it tastes good at all.
I might have to try it just to say I tried it, because again, like, if it's like, you know, again, it's probably very different than chicken and waffles, but I like chicken and waffles. I like that kind of idea of, you know, some kind of that bit of, I don't know.
Like, yeah, and if you like chicken and waffles, I can get it that you might want something sweet with your chicken, but it's the onion marmalade.
Yeah, that's the thing that I can't get my head around, but
yeah.
You know, again,
I can't even picture or imagine what an onion marmalade on its own tastes like.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I imagine it's kind of like a sweeter onion. I'm not a big onion fan, so I'm curious how that's going to affect it, but I don't know. Let's try it.
Why not? Then there's the cactus dog. Vienna beef hot dog topped with roasted corn and cactus relish, avocado crema, crispy jalapenos, and that's at section 114.
That doesn't sound that bad.
I mean, the most crazy I'll go with a hot dog is, if anyone's familiar with Short Leash in Phoenix, I will get a hot dog with ketchup, Swiss cheese, and bacon. And it's so good. But, yeah, no.
Does Gila roasted River have a snoring dog, by the way?
I'm sorry?
Does Gila River have a snoring dog, by the way? I know some places in Phoenix do.
Probably.
I don't think so.
Maybe.
Someone find that out for me. Because if they do, I'm definitely going to have some.
Well, yeah. The next game I go to... What about you, Carl? Are you going anytime soon?
Maybe this weekend. I'm not sure.
I'm going to be in Vegas this weekend, so I can't go.
Let me check my finances. Maybe Ottawa. That'd be a good one.
So, and for people who might not be familiar with what a Sonoran hot dog is, it is a hot dog that is wrapped in bacon and grilled, served on a bolillo style hot dog bun, mm-hmm. and topped with pinto beans, onions, tomatoes, and a variety of additional condiments, often including mayonnaise, mustard, and jalapeno salsa.
Yep.
I would say that's one of the better buns you can get for a hot dog.
A bolillo, of course.
Yeah.
Especially if it's soft. It's got to be nice and
soft.
Yeah.
I like the bolillo roll for sandwiches, and I think after 2 days it starts to harden. You're just like... And then, do you want to go with the last one, which is the most normal thing on there?
The Twisted Churro Loop, a twist on the classic served with Mexican chocolate dipping sauce. And that's at 202 and 217. I'm kind of ticked that's not on the lower levels, because that I would actually try.
Some of the churro options are the absolute best. If you can get a good churro anywhere, like, they're fantastic.
Last churro I had was the churro dog at the Diamondbacks game, and it was extremely disappointing.
Really? Oh, that's sad.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cold donut with ice cream and churro in there, and yeah, not a good combination.
I think this is something that I talked about. Obviously, this is not a churro, but the cinnamon taste reminded me of the one thing that everyone loves the Roadrunners games, and you guys know what I'm talking about. They're donuts. That small little donut stand.
The cinnamon donuts at the donut stand where they make them right there in front of you.
You watch it, yeah. For some people who don't know, at Roadrunners games, there's a small stand of people who make donuts, and they make the batter, and then it goes along this cart inside a deep fryer, and then it automatically flips over and finishes off frying and goes into its basket. Like, it's amazing.
And then you can get them plain or with cinnamon sugar.
It's amazing.
I think that there's a chocolate option, but I'm not sure about that. Don't quote me. But always get the cinnamon sugar option.
Yeah, always get cinnamon sugar option. And again, they're a good price for, you know.
$5 for a bag and cash only.
Yeah.
I mean, Roadrunners games have good prices for pretty much everything. I was very impressed with the price of the beer there and the fact that it was Barrio, because they make great beer.
Barrio beer is amazing.
Yeah. Yep. Best part, too, then.
The Coyotes do have new adult beverage options, too. I'll be happy to try these if you want. <'cause>... None of that food sounded interesting to me, but...
Pink Whitney, of course, is one of them because, you know, one of their media guys happens to be a co-host of the Spittin' Chicklets podcast.
Yeah, and apparently now New Amsterdam is a sponsor, so that's how that happened.
That does not surprise me.
So yeah, the Pink Whitney is New Amsterdam Vodka and Pink Lemonade, and it's available throughout the arena. I actually tried it at the home opener against Boston, and it was good. I did think it was a little light for the price, you know. I'd like more of a...
And that's why you get the bottle.
Yeah.
I got it for $10.99 at Total Wine and Beer.
Personally, I prefer my drinks a little bit stronger than that.
Yeah. Personally, I prefer my drinks to not be vodka and to be whiskey.
Whiskey is a good option.
The next one is the Lamplighter, which is also a vodka. It's New Amsterdam Raspberry Vodka with triple sec, grenadine, lemon lime soda, and a splash of club soda.
See, that doesn't sound terrible.
Doesn't sound like something I would order,
I'll
though.
I'll probably try that at the next game I go to.
Yeah, if I was at a bar, I would definitely not get anything that complicated.
Any kind of margarita, though, I'm down for.
Well, then we go to the Howlerita.
Ooh.
Milagro tequila, lime juice, yes. And agave served in a souvenir cup.
Milagro tequila, now that is some good tequila.
I will say this.
It's not the best tequila, but it's good.
If you're drinking liquor out of a plastic cup, you do feel a bit of shame at a certain point. I think Jim Gaffigan had that joke, but I've done it before, and you're like, why am I this? Hey, why am I drinking?
Something that was really cool, I went to a happy hour for a U of A-sponsored event, and they gave me when I ordered one of their happy hour beers, they served it to me in a souvenir aluminum Coors Light cup. And nice. It was, souvenir, so you could take it home. So it's aluminum, so, it's going to keep my drink cold.
Then there's another tequila drink. It's the El Coyote. El Coyote. Milagro tequila, lime juice, agave, and a splash of Ancho Reyes chili liqueur.
Oh, so it's going to be like a spicy, a spicy margarita. I like that. Because sometimes I get I forgot what it's called, but it's like a jalapeno infused tequila, and I have that, and it's not bad. And you put some chili chili lime salt on the rim, that's good.
You're just checking a lot of notes for me. I'm not going to be doing anything with chili. I've had chili beer before, and it was not for me. Chili powder, not for me.
Oh, but when you mix it with something like tequila, though. There's
tequila and lime juice. Tequila and agave is sweet, so.
Yeah, so you mix the sweet and spicy. It really works, especially, chili lime salt, a.k.a. tajin, really good, really solid for margaritas. I love it.
But for more for your taste, Carl, they do also have the new Kachina Throwback Ale.
Which I haven't tried yet. I want to. I hope it's good. I know Santan had a Yotes Pale Ale a couple of years back, which the first year was not good. The second year was really good, and I got a free shirt from drinking a lot of it. So
I think it really depends on when it comes to beer. It's like the kind of beer that it is. Like
you got so the Yotes Pale Ale was, I believe, an India Pale Ale, and
was it India Pale Ale or a regular Pale Ale? Because
I'm not sure.
I think it was a regular because it was red, and you don't see too many red IPAs. That's, except for Dawn of the Red, which is a really good red IPA.
Okay. I stand corrected. I'm not a beer person. I don't.
One of my favorite is the Roadrunner's Red Ale from Dillinger.
Oh, okay.
You'll be able to get at a Roadrunner's game if you guys come down.
I did look up the Kachina Throwback Ale. It's a Pilsner.
The Pilsner. Pilsners are okay.
Which, it's weird to call a Pilsner an ale.
True, like, you're right.
Let's call it a Pilsner, but whatever.
But then it doesn't sound as good, the Kachina Throwback Pilsner.
Yeah, that doesn't have a ring to it.
I mean, if you want something with a ring, then maybe make a different beer type?
So coming up first, Thursday night, we have the Nashville Predators.
That's going to be a fun game.
I have no idea who the Nashville Predators are this season. They are coming off a 5-2 win against Vegas, and before that, a 7-4 loss against the Kings. How?
I don't understand.
Yeah.
That is no exaggeration, almost half of the goals that the Kings have scored this season.
I mean,
20 goals.
I mean, to be fair, Tampa Bay lost to Ottawa in the last week. So
sure.
And actually, remember in that lost episode, I said that was going to happen. Just watch. I said watch it happen, and we laughed about it. And I was like, oh wait, it actually happened.
I'm sorry, I don't remember that, and it's lost, so you can't prove it.
God dang.
No, but Nashville definitely can be a very dangerous team and should not be taken lightly by any means by any team in the NHL.
Well, yeah, they're one of the they are and have been one of the top teams in the Western Conference, so they should be taken with some seriousness to it.
Yeah, and now they've got, you know, a legit top line center in Matt Duchene.
Yeah, exactly.
So that will definitely be an interesting game. It also happens to be Noches de los Yotes.
Yeah, I
say that right.
I know it's definitely closer than what I would have said. I'm actually really disappointed that I'm going to miss that game. The giveaway looked really cool. I would have liked to have attended. Unfortunately, I have a day job that gets me off at 6 p.m. So definitely cannot make weekday games.
Wow. I'm looking at some of Nashville, or at least Nashville's expected goal stats, and they're scoring more goals than they've been expected to.
So what you're saying is they're going to regress to the mean against the Coyotes and score none. I like this.
Yeah, their expected goals per game, 1.85, and they have 3.67 goals for per game.
I mean, the Coyotes have definitely been stingy so far, so I can see them, you know.
Maybe they'll have a game like they had against Vegas where they just, like, go off.
And just shut them down at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you could say the same thing about Winnipeg.
Especially for the very first time we're having a Hispanic Heritage Night.
It seems like they like to do theme nights with Nashville, because I remember a while back that was the Halloween game, which was not well attended.
Yeah. Well, I think it all depends. I think they mostly keep their promos to weeknights rather than weekends, so that they can try and draw crowds in.
It's a way to bring in crowds on weekdays, because, you know, that's, of course, the hardest day to bring them in, because traffic, people work, and all those, you know, other excess factors.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, just, like, you look at a lot of the teams, and there's a lot of transplants from Chicago and New York and Boston living in Arizona, because
snowbirds.
Arizona is a better place to live than Chicago, Boston, and New York. But you don't get too many people here from Nashville.
Transplants and snowbirds are not the same thing, just to clarify.
Very true. Well, I would say we definitely get both of them. Yeah, I'm also a transplant. And so are you, Rob. You came from...
I came from California. Yeah, from the Bay Area. I don't know. Yeah, you know, it's much cheaper down here, so...
Nobody is actually born in Arizona. If anyone tells you they are lying to you. That is
bad. Well, okay, I have a nephew who was born here and currently still lives here.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the Nashville game, though. This has got, you know, what I like about this game is, you know, the goaltenders for Nashville, of course, are solid goaltenders, too. So, got a solid
Karina and Yusei Saros.
They both are ridiculously good. You know, well, off when they're on, because they've had games when they're off and they look terrible. But when they're on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. That one's definitely, I think, going to be a low-scoring affair for both teams.
Yeah.
Which
I can
watch be a blowout.
It wouldn't, you know, with how the NHL season has been so far, it wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, again, 7-4 against Los Angeles.
Exactly.
The fact that Nashville scored 4 and LA scored 7, that's not how it's supposed to go. Although, Nashville definitely had more offense this season than we've known them in the past.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what their defense looks like without PK Subban now, too.
Yeah. That will definitely be an interesting one.
That is true.
And isn't this Dante Fabro's first year?
I believe so. He doesn't even have a snapshot yet.
Usually a good sign.
When players don't have headshots yet, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yossi, Ellis, Ekholm, and Fabro.
When I see players that are younger than me, as someone who's, you know, as the youngest guy of this podcast, it feels weird for me because it's like, well, there's a guy who's playing in the NHL and they're younger than me. Like, oh.
Yeah. It's kind of like that for me, except for when they're my age. It's like, hey, wow, there's someone who's still able to be in the NHL. They're my age.
You know, guys, just shut up. They're all younger than me, except for Joe Thornton.
And Patrick
Marleau.
And Chara, right?
Yeah, Chara too. That's it.
Because everyone else is retired now, or at least they're... It's weird, because I'm like... I feel like this year I'm getting a lot more news of an ex-player retiring than I've seen in the past.
It's just because it's players you know.
Yeah.
I guess because players I grew up, like, again, players I grew up hearing about or watching, then I hear them, this person retires, and I'm like, wow. Unbelievable.
I mean, did you guys see the picture of, was it Jágr?
Oh my God, yeah. Jaromír Jágr is a freaking beast. And he's, what, 47?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, clearly the Kings are going to be scouting him.
He's the king of the Czechs. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah. So, what do you guys think a score against Nashville is going to be?
Low scoring game. I'm going to put the win for Arizona. Chalk it up as a win. 3-2.
I'm going to say win for Arizona, but I'm going to go 2-1. It's going to be a goalie duel.
Okay. I can understand that one.
I think 3-1, because we haven't seen Arizona score 3 goals yet, or just 3 goals. And I think this is going to be their first one.
Okay.
It's either 2, 4, 1, or 0. So there needs to be 3 at one point, right?
I mean, you probably
sure
think so.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah,
sure. Why not? Really.
This is why I don't gamble, people.
Okay. Next up is Ottawa on Saturday after that.
Ottawa's been abysmal. Other than the win against Tampa Bay, which I don't know how that happened. Maybe Tampa Bay was just kind of, you know, caught off guard because they thought it was going to be an easy win. I don't know.
And they had just played the Maple Leafs too, so maybe they just took their foot off the gas.
I guess so. Yeah, you're right. They probably had their backup goaltender in, right?
I think so. I don't know for sure.
Who even is back a goaltender in Tampa Bay? Is it?
I believe it's Colonel Smakalini. No, would it? Would they have played him in Toronto? I don't know.
Yeah, Curtis McElhaney is their backup.
I just don't know.
Yeah,
if he played
Ottawa.
Okay.
Ottawa is like a team still because Coyotes fans need a fan base to feel bad for. Because for all of the ownership drama that we have encountered, I feel like Ottawa is somehow way worse.
Yes.
I mean, they are the lowest by far in the percentage of tickets sold to capacity in their arena. Like, I think
they couldn't even sell out a Eastern Conference final game.
Yeah, and I think their attendance percentage is like 60% this year, which is
No matter how bad the Coyotes have been,
the Coyotes
no matter how
I think,
questionable the ownership has been or the arena deal, whatever, we still sold out all of our playoff games.
Yeah,
I think the Coyotes currently are sitting at around like around in the 80%, maybe even up to closer to 90 for their, at least for the, these first couple of games at home that they've had so far.
And hopefully that will continue to grow if they play good this season.
And you would think so. Okay, well, and again, of course, you know, those weekday games, you are going to see a lapse in attendance, but that happens with every NHL team, almost every NHL team, unless you're like, you know, some super fan in Toronto and they sell out every single game for some reason.
Yeah. Okay, I should qualify that. I don't know that we actually sold out all of our playoff games, but I do know we sold out the Western Conference Finals. So
you would sure hope so.
Yeah. I mean, Arizona, LA, that should have been sold out. Also, there was two. Because LA was dominant that season. Yeah. In the playoffs only, and not great during the rest of the season. It was weird. LA's first cup run, I remember thinking, huh, this is weird. And then they played New Jersey, and I was like, New Jersey's in there? What? But yeah. Going back to Ottawa, they have not been good this season, as to be expected. But, you know, like Rob said, you sometimes get a night where everyone's clicking for some reason.
I mean, like, the thing about Ottawa for me is I'm not a big fan of much people on their team, much of the players. Let's see. I like Brady Tkachuk. And I like Thomas Chabot, mainly because they're on my fantasy team. But, I mean, other than that, let's see. They got Mikhail Bodker, Chris Tierney. Let's see.
Anthony Duclair.
I got Anthony Duclair. He's okay, but he's also, you know.
Inconsistent.
Inconsistent, yeah. And he can be a bit of a nutcase.
Oh.
He
did play in Tucson. What do you want to tell us about that, Rob?
It's more of, you know, his off-ice antics. He doesn't kind of he likes to go. Like, he complains a lot. Put it like that.
I mean, if you're talking about Ottawa and off-ice, you gotta talk about that Uber video for last year.
That's a whole other issue.
It was strange to see players talk good things about the Coyotes. And I think on the power play, too. And I was like, wow, if you are saying good things about the Arizona Coyotes power play, there's something wrong with yours.
Wait, when did Vladimir Nemestikov join Ottawa?
He got traded there from New York.
Was that a couple weeks ago?
That was relatively recent.
Okay, because you're right. Now that I remember the trade going through, and I was like, wait, what? And that's weird because Nemestikov was part of that top line with Stamkos and Kucherov, and they were freaking unstoppable when they were together.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
I mean, he didn't exactly do too well in New York.
New York got a defenseman, 25-year-old defenseman, Nick Ebert, and a 2021 fourth round pick for him.
Not great.
No, not at all. Didn't they give up a first to get him? No, that was somebody else.
They also have Ron Hainsey on defense. Ottawa does.
Yep. They have a whole bunch of ex-Leafs on defense.
Nikita Zaitsev.
Yeah.
Mark Borowiecki. He was the... what I still find funny from Mark Borowiecki was that about Twitter video from last year.
Yes, the PR video that he did with the owner.
With Eugene Melnyk. I felt like, you know, when that Twitter video started, I was like, Borowiecki, blink twice if you're being held hostage.
They also have former Coyote Jordan Schwartz. He had 26 games as a member of the Phoenix Coyotes, 9 games with the Arizona Coyotes, 2014-2015, and you got to make Spaceball references about his name. So it's really all you could ask for.
Interesting. Okay. Anyways, as a prediction for this game, it should be easy for Arizona.
I think I'm going to go against the grain and think they're going to take it too easy, and Ottawa might actually pull out a win.
Okay.
I'm thinking Arizona still gets the win, but Duclair gets a hat trick. Or
Oh,
Bodker
please
gets a
don't
hat
say
trick.
that.
Like, one of them is just like, I gotta do it. I gotta do it. I gotta show them that they gave up on me too quickly and does something great.
They both went to teams that aren't even the Senators from the Coyotes. I mean, they've been on multiple teams
Yeah,
since then.
they've had a fair share of moving around.
I'm not saying they would be right to think that. I'm just saying that's the mentality you go into your former team plan.
Yeah, but for Duclair, that's like half the league.
I will say, when he announced that he wanted to be under John Tortorella, I was like, "Are you sure?" I feel like this is going to end well for anyone, and it
Duclair,
did not.
Duclair and Torts did not work well together.
Color me shocked.
But I think, yeah, I still think it'll be a pretty easy, relatively easy game for
I hope
Arizona.
so. I just,
And I will say,
because it's always the easy ones that we screw up.
yeah, we do tend to play down against our opponents.
Yeah. So I guess I won't.
Sorry, I'm not going to
I'm
convince you
not
of
gonna
it.
say it's a blowout game, because I think, it'll kind of be of a way where, Ottawa will come out, running, and then Arizona will be like, "Oh wait, let's actually play a hockey game here." Let's see. If I were to make a score prediction on this one, 4-2, Arizona. So that's me.
Carl, you go.
I said the 5-3 with the hat trick from a former Coyote.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the score. Yeah, I'm gonna say it's gonna be something stupid and annoying, like 3-1 Senators.
That would be, if we didn't have good games against Vegas and Winnipeg already and take Colorado to overtime, a 3-1 loss to the Senators would break the fan base.
Probably.
It still might.
Yes, there's a very good chance.
Especially
We
since it's a
need to have
weekend game
a good
too.
game in Nashville for
Maybe
it not to just break everyone.
I'm just trying to go with a reverse jinx here.
Hey, reverse jinx tends to work. So.
And then next Tuesday, in one of those awesome 4 p.m., Carl doesn't get to watch any of the game, New York Rangers.
Yeah. Why do they have to schedule East Coast games when we're in that time period where we're on the Pacific time zone? Like,
4 o'clock doesn't make sense though. Like,
yeah, it does.
I guess
Yeah,
it
because it.
does, because it's 7 p.m. Eastern time, at least for now. But
Yeah.
still, I would like a lot of. I see a lot of ones start at 5 for Eastern Conference games. Like, I don't.
Not until November.
But no, I mean even in general, because like, yeah, again, being from California, I would see some games start at 5.
Really?
Not all the
8 o'clock
time, not all the
start?
time, but a couple games.
Well, I mean, maybe that's related to TV broadcast because
Yeah,
East
there
Coast
is
teams
an
do more.
8 p.m. Florida Nashville game.
Yeah.
That's not. But that's in Nashville, I think.
And Nashville is
8 p.m.
Eastern
Eastern.
time
Yeah, I know.
zone, so.
I guess.
But I mean, the Rangers, despite some big acquisitions this year, have not started off well.
Right.
Granted, they've only had 3 games somehow. That does not seem right. 2-1-0. So not
Yeah,
the worst.
it's weird with the NHL games, because some games will have only played like a fair of 3 games, but some have played like 7 already.
A couple have played 8. Toronto, Washington, Winnipeg have all played eight. Oh, Dallas?
Well, most of these teams didn't have like an entire week off like the Coyotes did.
Sure, very true.
I don't understand why the Rangers haven't been playing at all.
Did they do a Europe game?
No.
I have no clue.
That was the Flyers and...
They had a couple Europe games, I think.
Not this season?
One or two. Maybe two.
I know they had the Flyers and... Was it Chicago?
I believe it was Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. Like, they played Euro teams in the preseason and then opened their regular season against each other.
I mean, one of their first games was against Ottawa, so there's absolutely no way they were like, let's send Ottawa to Europe to show them what hockey's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eugene isn't shelling out the dough for that trip either.
No. So it could be that New York is just a secretly really good team. That
I just don't know because they haven't played. I don't understand.
Yeah, we're not sure. Like I said, they've made a lot of acquisitions, which we talked about in the season preview of Behind the Glass. So I don't know. I could see New York being a really good team this year. Or a good team. I don't want to say really good.
I think maybe can compete in the Metropolitan, because the Metropolitan is kind of a head-scratcher for me still.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like Carolina. To be honest, Carolina is probably one of the teams from the Eastern Conference teams that I actually like.
They're a fun team.
They are fun. Those bunch of jerks.
the Rangers. Let's, I don't know. They've played three games so far. They're going to be playing, I think, three games before they play us again, before they play us. So I think we'll have a much better idea game day on who the New York Rangers are this season.
Yeah, I can't. I don't want to put a prediction in here, but because, you know, we can, and because we're weird, I will.
Well, because presumably our next pod will be out and the game will be over with.
Exactly. Hopefully. So we kind of have to put it in there. You know, I can't have, I don't think, all right, let's put it like, yeah, Arizona can only go on a like crazy win streaks. I don't know if they're capable of that yet. I think they're going to lose that game.
I think they're going to win that game.
So I'm going to say the outcomes of the three games that New York has played. They beat the Winnipeg Jets 6-4, mm-hmm. which Winnipeg, one of the more hard to place down teams to start the season. They beat the Ottawa Senators 4-1, as expected. And they lost to the Edmonton Oilers 4-1.
And the Edmonton Oilers have been pretty good. So
yeah, and I'm not sure how long that's going to last.
Again, we were talking about that. They remind me of the Vancouver Canucks of last year, who, you know, eventually kind of fell somewhat back down to reality and became a mediocre team.
Yeah. So it seems like I think they're going to come in with some momentum, and I think we're going to lose this one to the Rangers.
Yep, I think we're going to win in overtime to the Rangers.
I think it's going to be a close game, but and overtime, actually, an overtime loss, I can see.
If there's any poetic justice this time, it'll be Grabner who gets the OT goal instead of Stepan.
I can see that.
Yeah.
And only because Antti Raanta doesn't, you know, generally score. Yeah. I do think he's going to get the start that game.
I would think so. I think we're going to see more starts from Raanta since he's only gotten the one so far. And I think the team's going to shift to a more 50-50 workload.
Have a tandem going, which is fun. Yeah. Those are good.
And, I mean, Kemper's hot right now, but you don't want to wear him out too much.
True.
That would be pulling a Gibson.
Yep. Anyways, so, I think that's it for predictions. I think, let's see, we are running long on this episode. It might be good to kind of give some final thoughts or close things off. So, what do you guys think? Final thoughts, close off?
Well, I'm happy that we are a 500 hockey team to start the season.
There
so
you
far.
Go.
We've bounded back from our 0-2 record. Fans need to take a breath. It'll be okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I said in the last episode that I was just glad that we scored in our first game. That was the only expectation I had. And I thought that we played really well to start off, and we've continued to play well and are getting offense.
Right.
I want that offense to be more consistent and more throughout the game. But I like where we're at right now. I feel very positive things about this team.
It's like in a level like you can feel comfortable with how this lineup has been set. So.
Yeah. And especially going into it, there was a lot of questions about the contracts that were handed out to Dvorak and Schmaltz. And honestly, they've been some of the best players we've had.
Yeah. So yeah, I think what I was like I was saying, like this is a team to feel somewhat comfortable with. You can be pretty happy with them, and they're gonna be, like what you said, Carl. That I wouldn't worry too much for a Coyotes fan. They're gonna do pretty well this year for themselves, and I think it's only looking up, and they will have a fun fight in this very interesting Pacific Division. Anyways, we're gonna close things off because this is a long episode. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of Desert Dogcast. As a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at Desert Dogcast. I believe you can also send us an email at desertdogcast@gmail.com if you have any questions, or you can message or you can tweet at us or message us, really any of us, any of the hosts, and we'll be able to answer your questions on our next episode or really anything. Once again, my Twitter handle is at RobLiano1.
I'm at RoseColoredFact.
I'm at CarlPavlockFFH.
So and you can leave comments on the Fiverr Howling post where you found this podcast, too.
Yeah, you'll be able to do that, too, and pretty much anywhere. Also, as a reminder, you can subscribe to us on Spotify or, I believe, really anywhere you can find a podcast. Maybe not yet, if we're on Google or iTunes yet. I got to check on those statuses. But if we are there, you can be sure to, subscribe there. You can rate us, you can review us, to make it so we look better on those charts and make it easier for other people to find. So
it's the internet in 2019. If you found us now, you could find us again.
Absolutely. So again, please subscribe if you would like our content, because if you do, you get notified whenever a new episode does get dropped. And that's not just a new episode of Desert Dogcast, but also a new episode of Inside the Glass, because, we have both of them kind of going through the same stream, and you'll be able to know when either of them come in. And, if you're a fan of both, if you're a fan of one, it doesn't really matter. You get to find out when both come out. Once again, thanks, everybody. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye, everybody.